So anyways, Gandalf is explaining how all these stones work to Pippin and everything, and Pippin's response was basically, man, if only I'd known, I had no notion what I was doing. And then what's Gandalf's answer there?
Yeah. He responds in return, you did know what you were doing. You knew you were behaving wrongly and foolishly. You told yourself so, though you didn't listen. Got chapter 11, The Palantir. No, sorry, what's the actual name of the chapter? I always read this.
It is called that, yes.
Okay. Oh. Okay. Chapter 11, The Palantir. This is book 3 of The Two Towers.
Chapter 11.
Yeah, I got that part already.
Oh, did you? You always say stuff okay, in different okay. orders.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I'm always winging it. Today, we have book 3 of The Two Towers, chapter 11, The Palantir.
Okay, cool. Okay, so today, this was quick chapter, but I thought a lot of it was good, so we got some stuff to quote for most of it. So, yeah, and then, you know, we'll just, I don't know, talk about that. So, you know, we'll talk about the hobbits. They weren't super present in the last chapter, I would have to say, but they are present in this one for sure. And then we'll talk about this Palantir thing, who ends up getting it, what's the plan from here, kind of sets up the next phase of the story, you know, because this is, if you're wondering, this is the last chapter of book 3, so, you know, yeah, we're about to be halfway through Lord of the Rings once we finish this.
Wow.
Yeah, pretty crazy. Okay. Yeah. All right, but before that, Cliff's notes.
Okay, so, the company, this being, at this point, Gandalf, Aragorn, Legolas, Gimli, Théoden, and the Riders of Rohan, Merry and Pippin. Basically, all the good guys that we've met so far, except Sam and Frodo. Or, I take it back. All the good guys who have been in the story the past couple chapters.
Yeah.
They ride from Isengard, making their way towards Helm's Deep. They move swiftly, but cautiously, avoiding the open plains in broad daylight. That night, they break for camp, but Pippin is restless and has trouble sleeping. After a brief chat with Merry, he stealthily rises and takes the glass orb from Orthanc that Gandalf has been keeping under a blanket. Pippin cannot resist looking into it and is quickly drawn in. However, he is soon knocked back with a cry, and Gandalf comes by to scold him and investigate. Though Gandalf feels the danger is minimal, a Nazgul flies overhead before anyone can go back to sleep. At that, Gandalf tells everyone to ride into the night as fast as possible, and not to stop until they reach Helm's Deep. Gandalf takes Pippin with him on Shadowfax, and they ride into the night to cross Rohan, making for Minas Tirith.
Oh, big deal. Nice. Alright, thoughts, feelings.
This one, I agree, I like this chapter. This was sort of a reckoning, tying us back to the broader storyline that I think we had been put to the side, put on the back burner for a second. You know, we obviously, big things have been happening. We've been talking about them. But this whole past couple chapters has revolved around Rohan, Isengard, Saruman, the Ents, Helm's Deep. And that's a part of a larger plot. And this chapter was like, I don't know, we kind of got short-circuited back into the broader struggle for good versus evil in Lord of the Rings in Middle-earth.
Yeah, I could see that. Okay, nice. I mean, it definitely comes back to, this is still kind of a Saruman chapter, but
yeah,
not so much. Like, yeah, it's kind of what you're saying. You break back into the whole conflict as a whole, because you know, the Saruman-related chapters are kind of done. I guess this is really just a transition one to end it, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Yeah. I guess we... Well, yeah, so let's just get into it, because maybe this will accidentally take forever.
or take forever on purpose.
Well, no, we never take forever on purpose, Clifford. I make it a point that I don't want to waste the listener's time.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we accidentally do. So, all right. So it starts out, Merry and Gandalf are riding together on the horse. So Merry's questioning him totally. And so he mentions...
Like, hey, where are we going? When are we stopping? What's going on? What's the name of that place?
Incessantly. That's the word, incessantly. Yeah. So he mentions to the small ragtag insult, that's something that Saruman had said in reference to the hobbits when they were talking to him in the last chapter. And then you want to take Gandalf's lines there?
Oh, sorry. So you heard that, said Gandalf. Don't let it rankle. Be thankful no longer words were aimed at you. He had his eyes on you. If it is any comfort to your pride, I should say that, at the moment, you and Pippin are more in his thoughts than all the rest of us. Who you are, how you came there, and why, what you know, whether you were captured, and if so, how you escaped when all the orcs perished. It is with those little riddles that the great mind of Saruman is troubled. A sneer from him, Meriadoc, is a compliment, if you feel honored by his concern.
All right, so yeah, so that's, kind of a small paragraph maybe, but that is, it's a cool idea that the big, powerful Saruman, second evilest guy in Middle-earth, he just doesn't understand how the hobbits got there. Like, these are the people he's trying to capture, and he doesn't know their whole story at all, and he just doesn't get him. Like, he doesn't get him for his own plots, but then overall, him and Sauron, they really just don't understand how hobbits fit into this whole adventure. You know,
right.
Like, why are hobbits with all these super strong people, the strongest people that are trying to defeat us? Why are they hanging out with these small little weakling people?
Right. It's confusing, and they know that both Sauron and Saruman spent some... Well, Saruman spent some decent resources sending out his roving band of the orcs of the White Hand to gather them up, and failed. So he knows something's up. He's definitely perplexed, confused, frustrated.
Yeah. Well, that's like kind of the, I don't know, micro level of it. But then there's the macro level of it too. That, you know, he knows that a hobbit had the ring originally, but he just doesn't understand why they're still involved with the whole adventure. But anyways, going on. Their plan is to ride for a couple hours out of the valley, and then they're going to make camp, and then the next day they should get to Helm's Deep. Yeah, and then from there, Théoden's going to take some meandering hilly route to Dunharrow before he returns to Edoras, because they don't want to make any more journeys in the open, just going forward, like, as rule of thumb. And then Gandalf tells Merry he doesn't want to talk anymore because he's got so much stuff to ponder. But why all this secrecy? I thought we'd won the battle.
Yes, we have won, but only the first victory, and that in itself increases our danger. There was some link between Isengard and Mordor, which I have not yet fathomed. How they exchanged news, I am not sure, but they did so. The Eye of Barad-dûr will be looking impatiently towards the Wizard's Vale, I think, and towards Rohan. The less it sees, the better.
I wonder what that link could be.
Yeah, that's more foreshadowing and aloofness than we normally get out of Gandalf.
Yeah, okay, so they go on, though. So anyways, they all make camp for the night, and they're all going to bed. Merry can barely keep his eyes open, and he's about to fall asleep. But Pippin is super restless, and he wants to talk for a bit. And so I'll take Pippin here.
Okay.
You had the luck, Merry, said Pippin softly after a long pause. You were riding with Gandalf.
Well, what of it?
Did you get any news, any information out of him?
Yes, a good deal, more than usual. But you heard it all, or most of it. You were close by, and we were talking no secrets. But you can go with him tomorrow, if you think you can get more out of him, if he'll have you.
Can I? Good. But he's close, isn't he? Not changed at all.
Oh, yes, he is, said Merry, waking up a little, and beginning to wonder what was bothering his companion. He has grown, or something. He can be both kinder and more alarming, merrier and more solemn than before, I think. He has changed, but we have not had a chance to see how much yet. Excuse me. But think of the last part of that business with Saruman. Remember, Saruman was once Gandalf's superior, head of the council, whatever that may be exactly. He was Saruman the White. Gandalf is the White now. Saruman came when he was told, and his rod was taken. And then he was just told to go, and he went.
Well, if Gandalf has changed at all, then he's closer than ever, that's all, Pippin argued. That glass ball now. He seems mighty pleased with it. He knows or guesses something about it. But does he tell us what? No, not a word. Yet I picked it up, and I saved it from rolling into a pool. Here, I'll take that, my lad. That's all. I wonder what it is. It felt so very heavy. Pippin's voice fell very low, as if he was talking to himself.
Hello, said Merry. So that's what's bothering you now. Now, Pippin, my lad, don't forget Gildor's saying, the one Sam used to quote. Do not meddle in the affairs of wizards, for they are subtle and quick to anger.
Okay, so then Pippin's response at this point was basically, well, dude, for months we've been meddling in wizards' affairs. I don't know what to tell you.
I just want to look at that ball.
Yeah. Well, what is Merry basically kind of tells him, sorry, dude, you're going to have to wait until morning. I'll help you weasel information out then, but I'm way too tired tonight. You know?
Right, right.
Also, interesting what they're saying about Gandalf. You know, like they're talking about how Gandalf, is he changed? What's different about him? You know, It seems like they realize too for sure that Gandalf's the new sheriff in town over Saruman. You know,
right.
Saruman was the White, Gandalf's the White now. Yeah.
Right.
But anyways, Merry goes to sleep. Everybody else is asleep except for Pippin. He can't sleep. So he starts and walks around, and surprise, surprise, he walks towards Gandalf, and Gandalf's holding the, you know, he's sleeping with the bundle, and this is exactly what Pippin wants to see. He wants to see this glass ball. Like, this is already obvious. And so he does actually, he takes the bundle, and he does do the trick where you put the stone in its place, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like it's like in a movie, and I think they did it in the real movie too, but yeah, so that happened. And then he takes a bundle and he's unwrapping the stone. We don't have time to read all of this, or else we'd be reading literally the whole chapter, but he's wrestling with himself really hard whether he should look or not. He decides to look because it'd be too hard to put away anyways, so if he's gonna put it back, you know, he might as well get his money out of it.
One quick thing here is in case anybody didn't catch it in the last chapter, it is important to kind of remind everyone that when this glass ball fell out of the Tower of Orthanc in the last chapter and banged off the stair, Pippin was the one who went and picked it up off the ground and handed it to Gandalf.
Yeah.
That's his only interaction with it, but that suggests what we're reading now seems to have had some impact on him.
Right, so that's where he's getting it from, but he's basically, he had a taste of seeing it in Isengard, and now he really wants to see it again, and he basically can't resist any of his impulses here.
Mm-hmm.
Fleming Rutledge pointed out, she said, you know, it takes work what Pippin's doing. Like, he's going, he could just sit, you know, it would be easier just to sit there, but instead he's going out of his way to steal this from Gandalf and look at it. And she has the quote, Pippin knows he is already in big trouble, but despite the evidence of his quaking knees, he finds all sorts of excuses for stealing ready at hand. He really is debating with himself, but he just decides, I'm going to do it because of these, in hindsight, very foolish reasons.
One thing this makes me think of, though, that's not too different, is Frodo wrestling with the ring.
Yep.
Many times when Frodo has been tempted to put on the ring, has put it on, pulled it off, that type of thing. This sounds very similar, and although certainly Pippin's being pretty foolish here and not logical, reasonable, etc., we have spent quite a while discussing, you know, Frodo's motivations, and like, even if he's trying to resist it, could he actually have resisted it? What outside forces are at play, that type of thing.
Yeah.
And there's definitely some of that going on here.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, all of those relate to any sort of temptations that every single person faces every day, you know?
Right, right.
Like, I was, Well, actually, yeah, you already heard. So this is the day I got my flat tire today. And so, you know, I was lying around the house and I did this new thing. Listen to this, pro tip. This is going to sound weird, but it's much better. Double stuffed Oreos, they're better refrigerated.
Weird.
I know, right? But like the white crap in the middle that I don't know what it is, uh-huh. It gets cold and it's better. It's 10% better.
But that's, you still don't know what it is.
That's why I said double stuffed, not single stuffed. I bet single stuffed, there's not enough white stuff for it to really freeze up.
Okay.
Anyways, this is, Yeah, so anyways, I was wrestling with myself. Should I eat lunch or should I just eat six of these and then just go back to about my day? And I did that twice. So that's how 12 of them are gone instantly.
Right.
Yeah, everybody can kind of relate to the temptation here, even if it's not as perilous as looking in a crystal ball or using the ring, which is the most powerful thing in Middle Earth.
Right, right. But also, to be fair, Pippin doesn't even know that this is... He just thinks it's a ball.
No, it's pretty clear. It's pretty clear he knows that this is something. This is something.
He knows it's something, but he doesn't know what it is. So yeah,
okay.
To him, it's like, I just want to look at it again, you know?
All right, let's see what happened here. You want to start it?
Pippin sat with his knees drawn up and the ball between them. He bent low over it, looking like a greedy child stooping over a bowl of food in a corner away from others. He drew his cloak aside and gazed at it. The air seemed still and tense about him. At first, the globe was dark, black as jet, with the moonlight gleaming on its surface. Then there came a faint glow and stir in the heart of it. It held his eyes, so that now he could not look away. Soon, all the inside seemed on fire. The ball was spinning, or the lights within were revolving. Suddenly, the lights went out. He gave a gasp and struggled, but he remained bent, clasping the ball with both hands. Closer and closer he bent, and then became rigid. His lips moved soundlessly for a while. Then, with a strangled cry, he fell back and lay still. The cry was piercing. The guards leapt down from the banks. All the camp was soon astir. "So this is the thief," said Gandalf. Hastily, he cast his cloak over the globe where it lay. "But you, Pippin, this is a grievous turn to things." He knelt by Pippin's body, and the hobbit was lying on his back, rigid, with unseeing eyes staring up at the sky. "The devilry! What mischief has he done, to himself and to all of us?" The wizard's face was drawn and haggard. He took Pippin's hand and bent over his face, listening for his breath. Then he laid his hands on his brow. The hobbit shuddered. His eyes closed. He cried out and sat up, staring in bewilderment at the faces round him, pale in the moonlight.
"It is not for you, Saruman," he cried in a shrill and toneless voice, shrinking away from Gandalf. "I will send for it at once. Do you understand? Say just that." Then he struggled to get up and escape, but Gandalf held him gently and firmly.
"Peregrine Took," he said. "Come back." The hobbit relaxed and fell back, clinging to the wizard's hand.
"Gandalf," he cried. "Gandalf, forgive me."
"Forgive you?" said the wizard. "Tell me first what you have done."
I took the ball and looked at it," stammered Pippin, "and I saw things that frightened me, and I wanted to go away, but I couldn't. And then he came and questioned me, and he looked at me, and that is all I remember."
"That won't do," said Gandalf sternly. "What did you see, and what did you say?"
Pippin shut his eyes and shivered, but said nothing. They all stared at him in silence, except Merry, who turned away. But Gandalf's face was still hard.
"Speak," he said.
In a low, hesitating voice, Pippin began again, and slowly his words grew clearer and stronger. "I saw a dark sky and tall battlements," he said, "and tiny stars. It seemed very far away and long ago, yet hard and clear. Then the stars went in and out. They were cut off by things with wings. Very big, I think, really. But in the glass they looked like bats wheeling round the tower. I thought there were 9 of them. One began to fly straight towards me, getting bigger and bigger. It was a horrible... No, I can't say. I tried to get away because I thought it would fly out. But when it had covered all the globe, it disappeared. Then he came. He did not speak so that I could hear words. He just looked, and I understood. So, you have come back. Why have you neglected to report for so long? I did not answer. He said, 'Who are you?' I still did not answer, but it hurt me horribly, and he pressed me, so I said, 'A hobbit.' Then suddenly he seemed to see me, and he laughed at me. It was cruel. It was like being stabbed with knives. I struggled, but he said, 'Wait a moment. We shall meet again soon. Tell Saruman that this dainty is not for him. I will send for it at once. Do you understand? Say just that.' Then he gloated over me. I felt I was falling to pieces. No, I can't say any more. I don't remember anything else."
"Look at me," said Gandalf.
Pippin looked up straight into his eyes. The wizard held his gaze for a moment in silence. Then his face grew gentler, and the shadow of a smile appeared. He laid his hand softly on Pippin's head.
"All right," he said. "Say no more. You have taken no harm. There is no lie in your eyes, as I feared. But I did not speak along with you. A fool, but an honest fool you remain, Peregrine Took. Wiser ones might have done worse in such a pass. But mark this. You have been saved, and all your friends too, mainly by good fortune, as it is called. You cannot count on it a second time. If he had questioned you, then and there, almost certainly you would have told all that you know, to the ruin of us all. But he was too eager. He did not want information only. He wanted you, quickly, so that he could deal with you in the Dark Tower, slowly. Don't shudder. If you will meddle in the affairs of wizards, you must be prepared to think of such things. But come, I forgive you. Be comforted. Things have not turned out as evilly as they might.
Okay, that was pretty big.
Yeah, so... Well, first thoughts?
No, you go first.
Sauron. Sauron's back. I know, right? And Pippin basically talked to him, had a little conversation with him.
I know, isn't that crazy? Because we haven't seen Sauron at all in Lord of the Rings. We know that he's kind of the boogeyman in the background of the story, and he's the ultimate bad guy. We also know that, you know, because we covered Brun and Lúthien, this is the guy that they fought, you know, this ancient evil guy. And this is the person that Galadriel and Elrond have been fighting for thousands of years as well, you know, and he's now... Okay, Pippin gets to see him. It's like, oh,
right. You know? Yeah, we remember from before, just the Sauron's gaze alone, like his eye looking over the landscape, was enough to impact people, and cast a shadow over everything. And Frodo was certainly swayed by that just like power radiating from him alone. And then here, Pippin is being interrogated by him almost. It's, kind of extraordinary. One thing this made me think of is, like, a scene in a gangster movie or something where you've got, like, the big, bad anti-hero gangster who is, like, normally protected by his bodyguards, but then he's, like, talking to one of his accomplices on his cell phone, but the accomplice is, like, I don't know, who's actually been gagged or something like that. And this is like the random guy who picked up the phone and is trying to impersonate the accomplice. And he's like, yeah, whatever you say, sir. Yeah. And then, you know, the gangster hangs up the phone and everything goes back to how it was. But that it felt like that similar, like, total power imbalance here.
Yeah.
But also confusion. And Pippin clearly had, if not the upper hand, the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, so they'll explain it later in the chapter, but why don't we just say it here? You understand what's going on here, right?
Well, what do you mean?
Well, okay, so obviously it's Sauron he's talking to, but Sauron, he thinks it was Saruman, kind of like you're saying, calling him up on the telephone. Mm-hmm. And he assumed that Saruman just placed this hobbit in front of him, like as in Saruman captured the hobbit that has the ring. Mm-hmm. And Sauron, as Gandalf was saying, you know, like Gandalf was saying, he did not only want information, he wanted you quickly so that he could deal with you in the Dark Tower, but he was too eager. So yeah, the too eager part. Sauron's immediately jumping, thinking, oh, good, finally, Saruman, my henchman, you know, and Isengard, he's finally paying off, even though he hasn't checked in a while. Yes, he's got this hobbit for me who has the ring. Good, it's about time. I'm so excited to get this. Send in a messenger right away to come collect him, you know?
Right.
He's not even thinking.
Right, and he blatantly ignores the hobbit himself because he's like, oh, this is some weak little pawn in the game.
Yeah,
I command you to go tell your master that I'm going to come pick you up pretty soon. So he's not even assuming that Pippin has any sort of willpower or knows anything at all about what's going on. Like, he might as well be a pet or a pile of rocks.
And very key here, he thinks Pippin has the ring. Yes. He thinks Saruman has captured the ring, so now he's sending a messenger to retrieve it so that he can have it.
Right.
The line, Gandalf had that line, but mark this, you have been saved, and all your friends too, mainly by good fortune, as it is called. So good fortune, it's another word for...
Divine providence.
Well, yeah, luck, and then, yes, the providence, yeah. So this is kind of weird. Pippin did something clearly bad, and now it seems something good might have come from it again.
Right.
I want to save that, because we can get into that as we... read a little bit more of the quotes here and stuff. Yeah, let's get into the next one, because this is one of my favorite scenes in the entire book, whole trilogy. So.
Oh man. With that, Gandalf returned to the others, who were still standing by the Orthanc stone in troubled thought. "Peril comes in the night when least expected," he said. "We've had a narrow escape."
"How is the hobbit, Pippin?" asked Aragorn.
"I think all will be well now," answered Gandalf. "He was not held long, and hobbits have an amazing power of recovery. The memory, or the horror of it, will probably fade quickly. Too quickly, perhaps. Will you, Aragorn, take the Orthanc stone and guard it? It is a dangerous charge."
"Dangerous indeed, but not to all," said Aragorn. "There is one who may claim it by right. For this assuredly is the Palantir of Orthanc, from the treasury of Elendil, set here by the kings of Gondor. Now my hour draws near. I will take it."
Gandalf looked at Aragorn, and then, to the surprise of the others, he lifted the covered stone and bowed as he presented it. "Receive it, Lord," he said, "in earnest of other things that shall be given back. But if I may counsel you in the use of your own, do not use it yet. Be wary."
"When have I ever been hasty or unwary, who have waited and prepared for so many long years?" said Aragorn.
"Never yet. Do not then stumble at the end of the road," answered Gandalf. "But at the least keep this thing secret, you and all the others that stand here. The hobbit, Peregrine, above all, should not know where it is bestowed. The evil fit may come on him again. For alas, he has handled it and looked into it, as should never have happened. He ought never to have touched it in Isengard, and there I should have been quicker. But my mind was bent on Saruman, and I did not at once guess the nature of the stone. Then I was weary, and as I lay pondering it, sleep overcame me. Now I know."
"Yes, there can be no doubt," said Aragorn. "At last we know the link between Isengard and Mordor, and how it worked. Much is explained." "Strange powers have our enemies, and strange weaknesses," said Theoden. "But it has long been said, oft evil will shall evil mar."
"That many times is seen," said Gandalf. "But at this time we have been strangely fortunate. Maybe I have been saved by this hobbit from a grave blunder. I had considered whether or not to probe this stone myself to find its uses. Had I done so, I should have been revealed to him myself. I am not ready for such a trial, if indeed I shall ever be so. But even if I had found the power to withdraw myself, it would be disastrous for him to see me yet, until the hour comes when secrecy will avail no longer."
"That hour is now come, I think," said Aragorn.
"Not yet," said Gandalf. "There remains a short while of doubt, which we must use. The enemy, it is clear, thought that the stone was an Orthanc. Why should he not? And that, therefore, the hobbit was captive there, driven to look in the glass for his torment by Saruman. That dark mind will be filled now with the voice in the face of the hobbit and with expectation. It may take some time before he learns his error. We must snatch that time. We have been too leisurely. We must move. The neighborhood of Isengard is no place now to linger in. I will ride ahead at once with Peregrine Took. It will be better for him than lying in the dark while others sleep."
"I will keep Éomer and 10 riders," said the king. "They shall ride with me early at day. The rest may go with Aragorn and ride as soon as they have a mind."
"As you will," said Gandalf. "But make all the speed you may to the cover of the hills, to Helm's Deep."
All right. Dude, all right, that was big. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Okay, so first of all, I'll just get it out of the way. Of all the kingly moments that Aragorn has, you know, in the foreshadowing lead-up, this one's my favorite.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I like this one the best because this time it's Gandalf the White who's literally bowing down to him to give him this thing. And then we're also, you know, you turn a couple pages ahead, you know that we're at the end, towards the end of a book, you know, one of these books here. So this is, I don't know, everything's a little bit hyped because we're towards an ending, I guess, right. You know. And then Aragorn, he really is kind of saying, like, yeah, now it's about time. It's my hour. Like, this is the time I'm about to show up. Like, we're really, really, really on the precipice of something awesome coming up. Okay, with that, too, also interesting note. He said this is the Palantir of Orthanc, which is from the treasury of Elendil, who was Isildur's dad, because Isildur is the original king of Gondor, and then Elendil was his dad, and that's who Aragorn's descended from. So anyways, this is kind of by inheritance, this should go to him.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting with this, too, we could talk about this in a second, but, you know, it's Gandalf's idea to give it to him originally, because as we saw it, Gandalf, this is a really powerful thing, who should take it? Even Gandalf doesn't actually quite want to have this, so when in doubt, why not give it to the rightful owner here?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, as I said, this is the link between Isengard and Mordor. This is how they were communicating. The Theoden line, with he says, strange powers and strange weaknesses have our enemies. And then he's got that quote, oft evil will shall evil mar. So I think these lines, anytime they're kind of in, when they sound Old English-y like that, those really are actually Old English sayings.
Oh, interesting.
And so, yeah, Tolkien kind of just throwing him in here, and they do apply. Because this whole thing, Sauron's screwing up because he thinks he just saw Saruman capture a hobbit. And now he's going to jumpstart his plans because, you know, he doesn't realize his mistake, right?
Right.
And it's from there that Gandalf says, "The dark mind will be filled now with the voice and the face of the hobbit and with expectation. It may take some time before he learns his error. We must snatch that time. We have been too leisurely. We must move." So they know that Sauron has miscalculated here. They got to take advantage right away. They're jumping at it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which is cool. Yeah. And then... yeah, back to kind of the providence part of it, you know. Gandalf literally says here, "Maybe I have been saved by this hobbit from a grave blunder. I had considered whether or not to probe this stone myself to find its uses. Had I done so, I should have been revealed to him myself. I am not ready for such a trial, if indeed I ever shall be so." So, you know, even Gandalf's admitting here, like, man, it's a good thing Pippin looked in it. Because now I don't have to, you know, because mm-hmm. I don't know if I could have done better than Pippin, even, is what he's kind of implying, you know?
Right, right.
Which is kind of crazy. I don't know. Do you have thoughts?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's not immediately clear, especially if you know what happens already in the chapter, you've seen the movies or something. You forget for a second that they don't know what this glass orb is that fell out of the tower. And they don't put the pieces together until after Pippin has looked in it, and Gandalf right. is then like, "Oh, we know about these. It's this yeah. so-called Palantir. Oh, and everything makes sense now. I should have known that he had one, but he didn't tell us. This has been secret for a long time." And so it is like a really key piece in the puzzle that they solve at this point. And so I think you have to remember that they would have been super confused going up to this point. And like Gandalf says, they might have been really risky about it because they just all they knew was that it was a glass ball that fell out of the tower.
Yeah, they probably knew about the plantery from history, but I don't know if any of them had really seen them.
Right, exactly, exactly. And we get, I think, a little shortly on.
No, we'll get to that later.
Okay, so anyways, that's something to keep in mind, and that kind of sets the tone for this discussion.
Second most exciting part of the chapter, because obviously Aragorn part before was the most exciting. Uh-huh. why don't you start?
At that moment, a shadow fell over them. The bright moonlight seemed to be suddenly cut off. Several of the riders cried out and crouched, holding their arms above their heads, as if to ward off a blow from above. A blind fear and a deadly cold fell on them. Cowering, they looked up. A vast winged shape passed over the moon like a black cloud. It wheeled and went north, flying at a speed greater than any wind of Middle-earth. The stars fainted before it. It was gone. They stood up, rigid as stone. Gandalf was gazing up, his arms out and downwards, stiff, his hands clenched.
"Nazgul," he cried. "The messenger of Mordor. The storm is coming. The Nazgul has crossed the river. Ride, ride. Wait not for dawn. Let not the swift wait for the slow. Ride." Obviously, all right, yeah, so this is the winged Nazgul. This is the thing that Legolas has already shot in Fellowship and everything. These mm-hmm. are the, yeah, the Black Riders that we've dealt with in the whole first book, and now they're flying away. So, you know, it's got all the scary, deadly, obvious part to it, but now they're also just flying too,
which and critically Gandalf is noting that it's crossed the river. If you remember from the very end of the Fellowship, there was the question of whether the Nazgul were ready to cross the river or had ventured out past there yet.
Yeah, we had also kind of wondered when the orcs had captured Merry and Pippin, why you wouldn't send a Nazgul then, because potentially they had the ring. So that right. was almost, that might have been actually just kind of a plot
right.
token that they hadn't crossed yet. But anyways, yeah, it's a very big deal that now they clearly have, okay, uh-huh. and it's going towards Isengard. From there, Gandalf hops on Shadowfax right away. Aragorn lifts up Pippin to sit with them, and then those two ride off. And then at that point, what does Merry say there?
"A beautiful, restful night," said Merry to Aragorn. "Some folk have wonderful luck. He did not want to sleep, and he wanted to ride with Gandalf. And there he goes, instead of being turned into a stone himself, to stand here forever as a warning."
"If you had been the first to lift the Orthanc stone, and not he, how would it be now?" said Aragorn. "You might have done worse. Who can say? But now it is your luck to come with me, I fear, at once. Go and get ready, and bring everything that Pippin left behind. Make haste." All right. So, Aragorn mentions luck once again. It's more so, "Merry, you kind of just had bad luck. You're stuck with me. You're not mm-hmm. part of the fun interesting part, you know. And mm-hmm. Merry's kind of just, man, some people have all the luck, kind of, you know, saying. What Pippin did, he did something stupid, and it seems he got rewarded for it, too.
Mm-hmm.
I read it in one of the books, but I had thought about it myself. This does kind of feel like the prodigal son story in the Gospels.
Okay.
There's the one son who asked for his half of the inheritance from his dad, and then he just goes and spends it on, like, I don't know, hookers and blow. I'll say something more appropriate. Spends it on, you know, frivolous stuff and completely wastes it. And then he realizes, man, this is really dumb. I am actually truly repentant and sorry. So I'm going to go home and just say, hey, Dad, you should treat me like one of your servants or something. And he's coming home. And before he even gets home, his dad's watching out for him. And the dad rushes up to him and just celebrates him. And then he gives a big feast because he's back. The older son who had been faithful is looking at that. And he's just like, what? But in reality, like, if you really think about it long enough, first of all, you're supposed to relate yourself to the prodigal son and not the well-behaved older son. But in reality, too, it is actually better when you kind of return.
Mm-hmm.
It's better for you to leave and then return, because the return makes everything more glorious. Like, inversely, you can think about it. We've already seen in this book, it's kind of a good thing that Gandalf died, because he got to come back. You know, like, that was really sweet. Like, it's more sweet that he's here back. Can you imagine, like, if this were just Gandalf the Grey that was left? I mean, Gandalf the Grey was super cool, too, but there is something, we can already tell that there's something interesting about Gandalf the White. Maybe, like, more, even though he's more cryptic, he's more sure that, you know, tide's turned, as he was mm-hmm. saying in that one chapter, right? Mm-hmm. And we kind of get that feeling forever. Interesting. This is the way it's supposed to work out. Pippin did something bad, but it wasn't by Pippin's actions that something good happened, though, you know, because Pippin did something bad. It was the providential, like, grace of God that steps in and takes over, even though, you know, to account for, weirdly account for Pippin's bad actions.
Right, right.
You know, yeah. Fun to think about. Mm-hmm, obviously, mm-hmm. Big theme in the book. Very cool. Okay, so from here, Gandalf and Pippin are riding away, and this is the rest of the chapter. So Pippin's recovering. They're talking about Shadowfax carrying him, you know, and you don't ride Shadowfax. Shadowfax bears you, whatever. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Oh, shoot. All right, this is the really long thing. So then we get more information about the Palantiri, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so
Palantiri.
Yeah, okay, so this is kind of a long section. You decide if we need to stop, okay?
Okay, sure.
All right, I'll start. Pippin was silent again for a while. He heard Gandalf singing softly to himself, murmuring brief snatches of rhyme in many tongues as the miles ran under them. At last the wizard passed into song, of which the hobbit caught the words. A few lines came clear to his ears through the rushing of the wind.
Tall ships and tall kings, 3x3, what brought they from the foundered land over the flowing sea? 7 stars and 7 stones and 1 white tree.
What are you saying, Gandalf? Asked Pippin.
I was just running over some of the rhymes of lore in my head, answered the wizard. Hobbits, I suppose, have forgotten them, even those that they even ever knew.
No, not all, said Pippin. And we have many of our own, which wouldn't interest you, perhaps, but I have never heard this one. What is it about, the 7 stars and the 7 stones?
About the Palantiri of the kings of old, said Gandalf.
And what are they?
The name meant that which looks far away. The Orthanc stone was one.
Then it was not made, Pippin hesitated, by the enemy?
No, said Gandalf, nor by Saruman. It is beyond his art, and beyond Sauron's, too. The Palantiri came from beyond Westerness, from Aldemar. The Noldor made them. Fëanor himself, maybe, wrought them, in days so long ago that time cannot be measured in years. But there is nothing that Sauron cannot turn to evil uses. Alas for Saruman. It was his downfall, as I now perceive. Perilous to all are the devices of an art deeper than we possess ourselves. Yet he must bear the blame. Fool, to keep it secret for his own profit. No word did he ever speak of it to any of the council. We had not yet given thought to the fate of the Palantiri of Gondor in its ruinous wars. By men they were almost forgotten. Even in Gondor they were a secret known only to a few. In Arnor they were remembered only in a rhyme of lore among the Dunedain. Well, I think let's pause there just to digest that for a second.
All right.
So
your thoughts?
Well, cool. I mean, Gandalf is giving us some of the history here. Unsurprisingly, cool, powerful thing we come across, much like the rings, come from an older time, from sort of Silmarillion
story frame.
Dude, who got mentioned?
Fëanor himself.
All right, so this is a good time to say this is one of the big gaps that we haven't covered in the Silmarillion is anything about Fëanor himself. We've heard about his shithead sons. We've heard that he was the maker of the Silmarils. So, you know, it's obviously a super important guy. So for our special for the end of book, what is this, 3? We're going to do a special, and by going to do, we already have it recorded. We're going to do a special about the life of Fëanor. So expect that in some time during our off break here.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, go on. What else about the Plantry?
So they hail from a completely different time and a different place. So it's they're sounds like they're a relic almost. But this clarifies what Gandalf and Aragorn had suggested earlier when we were just talking. Like they didn't quite know what was going on with this glass ball, but now Gandalf has put the pieces together and realizes what it is. Realizes that Saruman himself got the wool pulled over his eyes, basically, because it sounds like he found one. Thought that it was, he was like, oh, cool, great, found this old powerful thing. I can use this. I don't need to tell anyone else about this because it's pretty useful. Yeah. And turns out Saruman had another one, basically another phone on the line, it sounds like, and was able to just overpower Saruman via the orb.
Yeah, which is not surprising. Sauron's stronger than Saruman. Saruman mm-hmm. got dominated by him. Okay, so some good notes here too. Joseph Pierce did the best with this. So he says, the Plantiri, or the Seeing Stones, were made by the subcreative arts of the High Elves of old, a.k.a. Fëanor, and were, therefore, the product of virtuous subcreation. So this goes, their creation was in line with the elves, you know, like mm-hmm. the good magic, in quotes, but we don't even really, it doesn't even feel like magic, really. You know? Mm-hmm. But, as Gandalf tells Pippin, there is nothing that Sauron cannot turn to evil uses. So by this point, the way Sauron uses it, it kind of feels like the black magic, you know, like the bad magic.
Right.
In line with alchemy or all the bad warehouse technology kind of stuff that was in Isengard.
Mm-hmm.
With Lord of the Rings, the Plantir is used by Sauron to seduce and ultimately dominate the mind of Saruman. There's a couple other notes in this section that I'm cutting out, which you'll realize for future reason when I reference this again. Those gazing into the stone see only the part that Sauron's will permits them to see. In modern parlance, Sauron is feeding his enemies propaganda so that they will be seduced to his side, as with Saruman. So when Saruman would look into the Plantir, this isn't quite said, but Sauron's dominating him. How is he dominating him? Because he's showing him what he wants to see, right? And Saruman, he originally kind of had an idea like, oh, I want the ring maybe for myself, and I could, you know, use it for good purposes to stop Sauron and then maybe replace him and I'd just be a good ruler. But he keeps looking in the stone and everything, and he's seeing how powerful Mordor is. He gets the idea, if you can't beat him, join him, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so then he formally kind of submits to Sauron, like, I'll do your bidding, even though he still harbors his own ideas, like, maybe I can just do my own thing once I finally get the ring. But
right.
For now, I have to say I'm allied with this guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there's that. Now, listen to this section. This is good. This is really funny. So the Plantiri itself. So we already heard that the plant, you know, we read the line. Gandalf says it. The word means that which looks far away, right? Seeing stone, you know. Okay. So mm-hmm. listen to this. This is why you read supplemental books about this stuff, because there's mm-hmm. gems like this. Ready? Considering the ways the Plantiri are used by the powers of evil to disseminate pernicious propaganda, it is intriguing that Tolkien, through the words of Gandalf, makes a point of translating the literal meaning of the word Plantir. Gandalf informs Pippin, and therefore the reader, that the word means that which looks far away. More specifically, Plantir has its etymological roots in the Elvish language of Quenya, and consists of two elements, Palin, which means far and wide, and Tir, which means watch. This being so, Plantir is often translated as simply Farseer. Here we see Tolkien linguistically at his most playful, because Farsi in German is Fernsehen, the German word for television. And indeed, the word television itself also means Farsi or Farseer. Tele in Greek is far, and video in Latin is see. Television was very much an ascendant technology at the time Tolkien was writing Lord of the Rings, and he was clearly unsettled by the power of this new magic possessed to spread propaganda. In 1944, in the midst of writing his epic, Tolkien wrote a letter to his son lamenting the lies being disseminated by the BBC and Ministry of Information, the latter of which inspired Orwell's Ministry of Truth, the propaganda ministry in 1984. Today, more than 70 years after Tolkien had satirized the dark magic of television, there is a deeply ironic and wistfully whimsical lesson to be learned. Pretty fun.
Mm-hmm. Pretty cool. Definitely.
Yeah. Any thoughts? I don't know. That kind of just speaks for itself, but I thought that was really cool. Really good.
Yeah, the propaganda machine.
Yeah, and this is, well, the things of television, you know.
Right. Yeah, that's good. I mean, this is kind of a sidetrack. You know, we learned that there's some connection through this thing. Like, Pippin was somehow connected to Sauron, and presumably Saruman and Sauron would connect with each other through these orbs. I was thinking, okay, like, what does this actually involve? Seems like they're seeing each other and hearing each other, and maybe there's some, like, power transmission, like Sauron's able to influence people through it. But then the idea that Saruman, at least what Gandalf was suspecting was the case, Sauron thought that when Pippin picked up the phone, Saruman was, like, holding him in front of the orb, or punishing him or something, and he was like, you know, go pass along a message, which made me think, okay, that means he's like, it's like looking at the person and he can't see what's in the background and he can't see very far. And it sounds like it's just like FaceTime or something. Like, it's just like, it's like a little FaceTime. Yeah. And I just thought it was such a funny thought that, like, you got this tremendously powerful magic seeing ball and you could only see as far as like the face on the other side.
Well, hold on. All right, we're not going to read this part, but they go on to kind of talk about these stones more, like where they were housed and stuff, and it's really cool, but it's just not, we don't really need to read it. But right. Anyways, you can control it somehow. It's like a FaceTime that you can zoom in with, but it's really hard to control, like even for Sauron, apparently, you know. But Gandalf talks about, there is one special one that was in the north, because there was three in the north, four in Gondor. Gondor's in the south, right? Mm-hmm. But then when the kingdoms were originally set up, Elendil, the dad, he landed in the north, and there was the northern kingdom of Arnor. They had three of the stones, and the most powerful stone was there. And I think if you looked into that stone, you could actually see across the sea somehow towards Valinor, or towards where Numenor used to be, because that's where these people all come from, is that island of Numenor. And so Gandalf had, you know, he's got this line later where he says, even now my heart desires to test my will upon it, to see if I could not wrench it from him and turn it where I would, to look across the wide seas of water and of time to Tirion the Fair, and perceive the unimaginable hand and mind of Fëanor at their work, while both the white tree and the golden were in flower. He sighed and fell silent. You know, so, I mean, there's powerful stuff that you can do with these stones.
Right.
Kind of based on your powers yourself, and Gandalf wants to look across the sea, which is pretty cool, actually. You know, if you know what Tirion the Fair is, that's the elf city there, and if you know, you know, kind of Fëanor's work and the White Tree and the Golden, this is kind of a one of those nostalgic moments, right? That we know so much about. And if you read The Silmarillion, it's like, oh yeah, that would be great to see again, especially especially in the time of Lord of the Rings, because they haven't been in contact with that for millennia.
Right.
So anyways, Gandalf is explaining how all these stones work to Pippin and everything, and Pippin's response was basically, man, if only I'd known. I had no notion what I was doing. And then what's Gandalf's answer there?
He responds in return, you did know what you were doing. You knew you were behaving wrongly and foolishly. You told yourself so, though you didn't listen.
which goes back to you know, Pippin knew what he was doing was wrong, and it's somehow he's getting rewarded for it, which is actually kind of comical.
Notably, Gandalf says, you know, if I had told you what was going on, it wouldn't have warned you off. You know, you still would have been just as tempted, if not more tempted. And he's got this line: "No, the burned hand teaches best. After that, advice about fire goes to the heart." In other words, like, he's given Pippin a pass there. He's like, you burned your hand, but you were going to reach back into the fire until you got, like, really badly burnt. And it wasn't until then that this was actually going to be, like, locked in your memory.
Let's go a couple more lines there too.
Sure.
Purely because this is a heartwarming moment. Mm-hmm. So, it does, said Pippin, referring to, you know, the fire goes to the heart. It does, said Pippin. "If all the seven stones were laid before me now, I should shut my eyes and put my hands in my pockets."
"Good," said Gandalf. "That is what I had hoped."
"But I should like to know," Pippin began.
"Mercy," cried Gandalf. "If the giving of information is to be the cure of your inquisitiveness, I shall spend all the rest of my days in answering you. What more do you want to know?"
"The names of all the stars and of all living things in the whole history of Middle-earth, and over heaven and of the sundering seas," laughed Pippin. "Of course, what less? But I'm not in a hurry tonight. At the moment, I was just wondering about the Black Shadow. I heard you shout, 'Messenger of Mordor.' What was it? What could it do at Isengard?" Oh yeah, so at this point, Gandalf reveals, like, yes, or confirms, that's a black rider on wings, obviously. "But that one probably wasn't coming for you, because Saruman must have checked in at some point after the orc raid or after the Ents attacked or something, because based on how long ago you checked it, there's not time for the Nazgul to fly all the way to Isengard from Mordor in that time, because that's like 200 leagues away," says Gandalf. I don't know if it's really quite 200, but maybe it is.
The suggestion being Sauron can't magically command this Nazgul from afar, do any sort of telepathy. He basically had to do it old-fashioned way, like relays a message, here's something's going on at Isengard, and has to dispatch one of his soldiers.
Right. Okay. Now, what he did say is, Gandalf did say, he's probably sending another one as soon as he saw you in there.
Right.
Like, there's a second coming probably as well. And then Gandalf also talks, he's saying, basically, you know, either way, though, Saruman's just so screwed. Like, he has no captive, he has no stone to answer Saruman's, you know, calls again, so he's going to have a bunch of missed messages. The Nazgul are going to be bearing down on him. Who knows if they can get into Isengard or not, but maybe they can. And really, just too bad, because I gave him a chance and he rejected us.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what else to say, right? You know, or, well, what, actually, he does have a quote. What does he say?
"But I cannot tell how it will fall out, well or ill for us. It may be that the counsels of the enemy will be confused, or hindered by his wrath with Saruman. It may be that he will learn that I was here and stood upon the stairs of Orthanc, with hobbits at my tail. Or that an heir of Elendil lives and stood beside me. If Wormtongue was not deceived by the armor of Rohan, he would remember Aragorn and the title that he claimed. That is what I fear. And so we fly, not from danger, but into greater danger. Every stride of Shadowfax bears you nearer to the land of shadow," Peregrin took.
Yeah, so as they're going through, Gandalf's kind of revealing the whole history of Gondor, which we skipped over parts of it. You know, read it yourself. These last pages really do feel like the transition into the next phase of the story. You know, the Saruman-Rohan struggle, that's over. Now it's the Sauron-Gondor struggle. Because, yeah, we kind of find out that Gandalf, he's bypassing Helm's Deep. And they're going straight towards... Well, actually, hold on. Let's take the lines here.
Okay.
"I thought we were going to stop at Helm's Deep," said Pippin. "Where are you going, then?"
"To Minas Tirith, before the seas of war surround it."
"Oh, how far is that?"
"Leagues upon leagues," answered Gandalf. "Thrice as far as the dwellings of King Théoden, and they are more than 100 miles east from here, as the messengers of Mordor fly. Shadowfax must run a longer road, which will prove the swifter. We shall ride now till daybreak, and that is some hours away. Then even Shadowfax must rest, in some hollows of the hills, at Edoras, I hope. Sleep, if you can. We may see the first glimmer of dawn upon the golden roof of the House of Arryl. In the 2 days thence you shall see the purple shadow of Mount Mindoluin, and the walls of the Tower of Denethor white in the morning. Away now, Shadowfax. Run, Greatheart, run as you never have run before. Now we are come to the lands where you were foaled, and every stone you know. Run now. Hope is in speed."
Shadowfax tossed his head and cried aloud, as if a trumpet had summoned him to battle. Then he sprang forward. Fire flew from his feet. The night rushed over him. As he slowly fell into sleep, Pippin had a strange feeling. He and Gandalf were still as stone, seated upon the statue of a running horse, while the world rolled away beneath their feet with a great noise of wind.
It's a great ending. I love that imagery.
I know. Super cool ending. It's the coolest part of it all. There's fire coming out of Shadowfax's feet.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, to be fair, I read that as just colorful language. Do you think there's actually fire coming out of his feet?
I would like to think so, actually.
The next, because he says night rushed over him. That's very, like, you know, nice metaphorical language.
When you see a drag race car go light off, what do you see? You see fire coming out of the back of it.
Okay.
Anyways, yeah, that was the ending. You know, it, clearly in those last couple pages, it's maybe it's a quick swivel because it's abrupt swivel because the Nazgul comes and attacks and starts everything up and switches the direction of the chapter. But you know, eyes towards Minas Tirith and Gondor now. You know, we're getting that right here at the tail end of the third book, fourth book. I think we're gonna go back to some other characters. I forget their names. I don't quite know who they are, but I don't think it's the same people as this. But anyways, we'll come back to them eventually for later, and we're going to jump right in where we left off here.
Cool.
All right, Clifford, we're back again.
Welcome back.
How you been?
Pretty good. We had some friends visit us for... they were planning to visit in March and finally made it out here, but it was really nice.
Nice.
It's like summer weather here, so I was pretty happy.
Awesome.
Took an extra day off work, so.
Ooh.
How about you?
Good. Check out my new hat.
Looks sweet.
I know,
sweet,
right?
Biker cap. What's the story behind it? Life in the Peloton?
Yeah, this is the guy just got these like a couple months ago. This is one of my favorite podcasts, and he it and I saw it and I was like, must
oh it's, own. A, it's a podcast. Okay.
Yeah, getting it delivered from Spain immediately. And since I was awesome. On his little website, I bought in. I'm a consumer, and I got his coffee mug too, and so I don't have that down here right now, but I've been That's excited great. Drinking out of it. Yeah
You're supporting the economy.
We shouldn't have to do that, but yes.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it looks good.
Yeah. Okay, so this was the end of the Palantir episode. So from here, we're going to go on a break.
Sorry, random side note. This is a total diversion, but in the New York Times Magazine this week, there's an article about a tech company called Palantir, which I'd never heard of before.
But
the article is about them in hot water, basically. They're like a data analytics company that does like a lot of work with the CIA and like government army organizations around the world. And the lead guy was quoted as saying at the beginning, like, you know, we're out here like trying to save the Shire, like as the mission of his company, referring to government, like trying to help governments protect like the goodness in society sort of thing. Kind of funny though. It's yeah, felt a little bit like the substance of the article made it sound like this was the dude who founded it was like Saruman and clearly thought he was really powerful and could do a lot of good, and then got wooed by how powerful his seeing orb was and
yeah, I mean, it's pretty stupid to just name your company after that.
I know. I was like, bold move. Yeah.
And it didn't work out for
you. Anyways, yeah, if anyone's interested, you can go look it up.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, thanks for telling us that, Clifford. That's actually, that's pretty cool. Pretty timely.
Yeah.
Okay, so anyways, at this point, we're going to go on our break because we finished another book. But in between, we've already got, like I said, the Fëanor special recorded. So look out for that. It's going well. It was probably our longest, but I'm flying through the editing because it's just, you know, we only use the one microphone, so it's so much easier. Oh my gosh. But yeah, look out
half
for
the
that.
Fun.
Yeah, look out for that relatively soon, and then hopefully we'll get on to book four before the year's out. We probably will before the year's out, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, we'll see. Yeah. But yeah, cool. All right, cool. Anything else?
No, none.
Yeah. All right, well, halfway through Lord of the Rings, everybody. Thanks for being a part of it, and hopefully we finish off the second half well.
Yeah, congratulations for listening this far, and we hope you stick with us.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks, y'all.